Blog Talk Radio. The Goldstein on Geld Show is sponsored by Profile Investment Services, which helps folks around the world with stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and other investments in U.S. brokerage and IRA accounts. Get in touch with Profile if you'd like help with your portfolio at www.profile-financial.com.
Listening to International Investment Advisor Doug Goldstein on the Goldstein on Geld Show, www.goldsteinongeld.com.
Hey everyone, Doug Goldstein here. Thanks so much for joining me. Got a great show today. I want to tell you something that happened this week, a conversation I had, and frankly this comes up a lot and I thought I should mention it to you. Most of the work I do, I guess, my day job is that I work with couples. So, as you know, I've joked on the show that I work more often as a marriage counselor than as a financial advisor, but that's really because I think money is a very emotional issue, and it, people bring a lot of baggage to the table, and it's good for them to have someone on the outside who can just help them to work through the issues and talk about it. But the question came up when we were setting an appointment for someone, and the husband said, "Oh, I don't think my wife needs to come." And frankly, I hear that kind of thing a lot, and a lot of times I'll have meetings. Sometimes it goes the other way. I'd say more often than not, it's the husband that is taking charge, but sometimes the wife takes charge. And the question is, do you need to bring your spouse to the meeting with your financial advisor? Or do you have to have him or her on the phone with you when you're talking to the financial advisor? So there are some practical considerations and there are some philosophical considerations that we need to talk about here. And also there's a question of whether it is a first marriage or a second marriage. Let's talk about that in just a minute.
You're listening to the Goldstein on Geld Show with certified financial planner and best-selling author, Doug Goldstein.
I started the show talking about the discussion I have or the question that comes up a lot when people want to know if both spouses need to be involved in the financial planning meetings or the meetings with their investment advisor. So first, I want to distinguish between first marriages and second marriages, or maybe this could be more generally distinguished by where the money is and how people see the money itself. I think the ideal, and I realize it's not going to be true in every case, is that the husband and wife, like a team, should handle all of their finances together and everything should be combined and people should have joint accounts. That would be the ideal. But that being said, there's many reasons why it's not going to happen that way. So in a second marriage, a lot of times money is separated and there's an arrangement that the couple came to before they got married. And sometimes they'll have a joint bank account into which each of them deposits money, but their investments are kept separately. In that case, it probably makes sense for certain investment discussions to have them separately. But if you're having a discussion about home budgeting, then that's something you have to do together. But in a first marriage, what's the best way to do it? Again, I'll say the ideal is I think it's great if everyone gets involved in all the details. So each spouse is totally aware of what's going on. And if heaven forfend one of them should die, the other one can continue working on the investments. That being said, I understand not everyone is as interested in finances, well, maybe as I am, or my wife is, because she and I do all of this together also. If that's the case, and only one of you is really going to be handling the investments, I still think both spouses need to come to the financial planning meetings. They need to come to the big picture meetings. As an advisor, when I work with a couple, if I see that one spouse is more interested in talking to me about which stocks or mutual funds to buy, and the other one totally couldn't care less, and in fact is spacing out, so then maybe I'll suggest, let's talk about your goals and your household budget and how we're going to achieve your goals, and let's talk about big issues of risk. And again, I'm not trying to say I'm going to discuss the standard deviation of a certain mutual fund. Rather, I'll try to talk in language that everyone can understand, so that both spouses can participate in the risk discussion. It's not appropriate for one spouse to make a risk decision and the other one doesn't understand it. Because if you're taking a lot of risk with your money and your spouse doesn't like that, well, that's not appropriate. So you need to find the common ground in the big picture areas. And the only way to do that is for both spouses to be involved in the financial planning discussion, the big picture discussion, and then if only one of you wants to be involved in the smaller details, that's okay. And thinking of dealing with spouses, that tells me about my first guest, Peter Rosenberger, who talks about spouses as caregivers. And he's going to be on the first half of the show. And in the second half of the show, I'll be talking to Kit Yarrow about the psychology of consumers. So stay tuned. In just a minute, I'll be bringing on Peter Rosenberg on the Goldstein on Gelt show.
If you live in Israel and have investments in the United States, contact Profile Investment Services today. Profile helps people who live in Israel with their U.S. brokerage and IRA accounts. Call 02-624-2788. That's 02-624-2788. Or check out www.profile-financial.com.
Okay, we are back. I'm very happy to have on the Goldstein on Gelt show Peter Rosenberger, who has decades of experience as a caregiver. He's also an author of 3 books. He's got a radio show. He's heard all over the place in the media talking about the not only just the history, but the important things that everyone has to know about being a caregiver. Peter, real pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much, Doug. I am thrilled to be with you.
So give us a little background before we get into some detailed questions. How did you get to where you are today?
Well, I married my wife, Gracie, right out of college, and she had already had her car wreck way back in 83, and it was a bad car wreck. And I met her after the wreck, and she had recovered, come back to school. She looked great, but she had some physical damage to her legs, limps, scars, so forth. But I just saw past that and saw this remarkable woman. She'd had about 20 surgeries when I met her, trying to kind of orthopedically put her back together, but it was a pretty bad wreck. We didn't know, of course, what the future is going to hold. None of us do. And we jumped into this thing, and I said I was going to take care of this girl, and I have. Sometimes I've done it extraordinarily well. Sometimes I failed miserably, but we're still here 29 years later, 78 surgeries, both of her legs amputated, $9 million, 60 doctors, 12 hospitals, 7 insurance companies. That's quite a journey.
Wow.
And what I've learned is, everything I've learned, Doug, I've learned through failure. But it seems
all right. But we're going to learn from you. I hope you don't mind.
Well, that's what I'm doing, is trying to save some people some of the mistakes that I made. But the journey of a caregiver is a brutal one. We get up every day. We put ourselves between a vulnerable loved one and disaster. And how do you help somebody who helps somebody? What does it look like to help somebody who's keeping it on the rails? And I can't count, Doug, how many people have asked me how my wife is doing. But I can count the number of people who have asked me how I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the paradigm shift I'm working towards, is how do you help these people that are standing in the corner of the hospital room, that are pushing the wheelchair? They're the ones that are doing it. And it's not just saying get a good night's rest or have a good diet or get some exercise. It's helping them fiscally as well as physically. And that's what brings me to you.
Let's talk about some of the technicalities. In the United States, how many people are caregivers, and who are the people they're caring for?
Right now, we have over 65 million Americans volunteering to care for a vulnerable loved one. And that number is expected to explode as these almost 90 million baby boomers step into senior status. And
let me understand. That's about 20% of the population are caregivers.
Exactly.
So, and are these full-time, or is this just that they're helping out?
They're volunteering family members. It varies. Some of it could be 20 hours a week if they're not living with the individual. If they're living with the individual, it's at least 40 hours a week. And that's just for the aging population. Then you've got this large number of families with special needs children, or in my case, a wife with disabilities and so forth. So you've got various demographics in this, but they're massive numbers. And get this, Doug, over the next several years, they're expecting $1 trillion worth of wealth to be transferred in caring for these people, whether it's going to be going to assisted living homes, retirement centers, or the government, or whatever else. And this is a real problem, $1 trillion of wealth. I heard this statistic. I was speaking at a conference this weekend in Colorado, and the guy got up and was talking about this, and that's a staggering amount of money. And how do you manage that money? How do you keep that money from just being bled out of your family as you're caring for your aging parents or your disabled loved one or whatever? How do you manage that and protect those assets that you've worked, your blood, sweat, and treasure?
So is that the big challenge that people who are caregivers face, the financial side?
I think it's one of them. I think you have six major areas in your life as a caregiver: your health, your emotions, your lifestyle, your profession, your money, and your endurance. Spell it all together, says help me. And those are the big areas that we face. You can't just focus on one thing. So many times people say, well, get a good night's rest or get some exercise or whatever. Well, that's important physically, but fiscally it's also important. How do you hold down a job? 47% of the caregivers out there are in the workforce, Doug. So how do you hold down a job and grow in your career? So many of these people are turning down promotions. They're turning down raises and so forth because they don't want the added responsibility because they're taking care of somebody at home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, think about that on the family finances. How does that affect the family? And then you've got 72% of caregivers out there. Of that 65 million, an estimated 72% don't even see their own doctor regularly. Well,
they're caring for someone else, but they're not taking care of themselves.
But that's a time bomb.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're talking with Peter Rosenberg, who's an expert in the field of family caregivers. He's written a number of books, and he's got a radio show on the topic, and he's been teaching us so far about some of the more personal issues. Peter, I want to drill down into the financial side, which you were touching on, and one of the things you mentioned is that the problem that caregivers have is with their own career. Tell me a little more about that, and are there solutions that we should be talking about?
Well, there are. Let me go even past the career. Life insurance. I mean, this is an issue I beat on over and over and over. How do you call yourself a caregiver if you don't have life insurance? Because what you're doing is you're running the risk that you're going to outlive this person. And that's not always the case. The stress on somebody taking care of a family member with full-blown Alzheimer's is statistically, they say it takes about 5 to 10 years off of somebody's life, just the stress on that.
Oh, my gosh. So you're saying, let me just point out, that the caregiver himself or herself needs to ensure his own life so that if he should die, then there's going to be money that can be used to help the person who was taken care of.
If you die, you take out their caregiver and their money if you don't leave them anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, so you've really – it's a two-for-one deal. If you go down as a caregiver, you're taking down that loved one as well. And it's hard because when you're in the middle of it, Doug, it's saying, oh, my gosh, I got one more thing I got to think about. But this is where I think that your synagogues and your churches and so forth can come together and provide good counsel to these folks. They can't always – see beyond their own crisis at the moment. There's a wonderful scripture says, and Proverbs says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not unto your own understanding. Well, in this particular case, we can't lean on our own understanding. We've got to solicit the counsel of other people, and that's why I push people to financial planners. This is why I push folks to organize their finances and help get those resources to think beyond their own grave, and then in your job situation the same way.
So we've spoken a little bit about now the insurance side, the life insurance in particular, and of course there are many other insurances, and one I'll just bring up as well is the disability insurance, which is often referred to as the forgotten insurance, because if you're a younger caregiver, meaning you're not in your 70s or 80s, but you're maybe taking care of parents in that age, you're statistically much more likely to get disabled yourself than to die. And so you have to make sure that there's going to be money coming in the event that you were to get disabled. So I see this really a specialty in terms of dealing with an insurance agent who can properly guide someone who is dealing in a family caregiver situation.
Well, there's several things. I'm meeting with my financial planner on Friday. We meet pretty regularly, and we go over some things because he knows the stress that has. In fact, one of the things he told me, he said, you know, Peter, I stay awake at night worried about you guys. You know, and so that's what you want out of a financial planner, somebody
sure.
who cares that much. But you got long-term care insurance, disability, you got all kinds of stuff, short-term disability. You know, what happens if, you know, I mean, Doug, I like to snow ski. So if I break my leg snow skiing, how is that going to affect my family's dynamics? And so these are things I look at, and I have to be very careful on what I do, and I have to understand that I have a very fragile ecosystem. Now, sometimes you can be so insurance heavy that, you know, you start giving people ideas. You don't want to put a bounty on your head. But at the same time, you've got to have some good counsel on this. And then special needs trust. I don't know how much you've gotten into that over the years, but if you've got somebody with a disability, my brother, for example, has a daughter with cerebral palsy, and she's 26 years old, has severe cognitive impairments. Well, if he leaves her a bunch of money, it may kick her out of the Medicaid system that she might be in. Mm-hmm. And so you have to set up certain things like that, and that's why you got to have good counsel around you.
I think that's very true. Peter, we're nearing the end of our time, but there's one of the other topics I certainly want to touch on is, do people become caregivers in a way that they can predict? They can say, oh, it looks to me like I'm going to probably end up being a caregiver, or does it more often happen as kind of a surprise?
Well, here's the way, the rule of thumb I have. If you love somebody, you're going to be a caregiver. If you live long enough, you're going to need one.
Mm-hmm.
And in my case, I walked into it eyes wide open as much as I could understand. But for most of us, it kind of one day our parents have such and such issue, and then all of a sudden, boom, we're thrust into that role, and we have to react. Let's don't react. Let's respond, and let's start early and plan. Now, you know, a lot of people are going to wait to the last minute, and they're going to freak out about it. And that's just human nature. But I'm over here waving the flags and using the bullhorn as much as I can, and I appreciate you letting me come on your show to talk about this. It's a very, very serious issue, and you don't want all your wealth just to just be dissipated away through the system that will take over if you're not prepared.
Well, we have to start talking about building that wealth. You know, Peter, one of the issues that I have in as a financial planner in my day job is I'll talk to people all the time about saving for retirement and saving for long-term goals, and just that is hard enough. In other words, I tell someone, listen, if you don't put aside money, you're going to be, you know, living when you get old. And so I can paint the picture and maybe convince them to start saving. But it sounds to me like what you're advising is you need to have more money put aside in the event that you end up in a caregiver situation, which you're saying is pretty likely.
I think it's very likely, and I think that you don't have to start with a lot. I mean, you know this, Doug, and you tell this to your people. You don't have to put $7,000 a week away in some kind of nest egg. You know, you can start small, and you can do things. I tell people I do a 1-2-30 system for everything, 1-2-30. For finances, I say find a charity you could support every month. It just gets your mind. It's healthy to get your mind off of somebody else's misery besides your own. And then two meetings every year with the financial planner, at least, minimum. And then $30 per paycheck. If you just squirrel away $30 per paycheck, you know, that's a start. That's something. Some people can do $30,000 a paycheck. but the point is, do something to start protecting yourself and providing for, you know, if you need to go out and buy a walker, if you need to go out and buy, a handicap conversion van or whatever. There's so many different things that could happen. And it starts with, you know, a step in the right direction is two steps away from the wrong direction. And that's the way I kind of look at it.
That is very true. And not only that, and maybe we'll leave off with this, but just your description, the 1-2-30 plan, is developing good financial hygiene or simply developing the right habits. Peter, talking about developing good habits has been something we have been stressing on the Goldstein on Geld show for a long time on the financial side. But now that I bring you on, I think I'm going to start talking about it in terms of keeping in mind what you're saying, in case one day and in the likely event that either we will become caregivers or we'll have to be cared for by someone else. Peter, now we're just about out of time. So tell me, in the last few seconds, how can people follow you, learn more about what you're doing, and keep track of what you're teaching?
You could go to caregiverswithhope.com. Caregiverswithhope.com, or you could text the word CARE to 64895. CARE to 64895, and that's pretty easy.
And what happens if you do that?
Oh, it's real special, Doug. you get a little text from my radio show with a link to tell you about the show and all the things that I have, the resources. I put all this out on the web. I do blogs, so forth, and podcasts. You can listen to my show worldwide on iHeartRadio, and it's just I'm preaching just like you are about money. I'm preaching this about being a caregiver and the stresses that are on us, and I just want folks to know that they're not alone, and there is help, and we can do this together.
Okay, that is a great lesson. And Peter, we are going to put those links up at the show notes of today's show at GoldsteinOnGelt.com. Peter Rosenberger, thanks so much for your time.
Doug, thank you. What a treat.
spoke about whether husbands and wives together should come to financial planning meetings or whether just one of them needs to come. And in the beginning of the show, I think I made it very clear that for the big picture discussions like your goals and what you're trying to do with the money and where you want to spend money and how much you need to save, all of the financial planning kind of issues, both spouses have to be equally involved in the discussion as well as the decision making. If there are specific investment choices and one of you likes doing that kind of thing more than the other, so then I'm okay if only one of you is kind of handling those day-to-day investment decisions. But one of the things I want to raise, which is a point that comes up from time to time in my office, is sometimes one of the spouses gets sick and the other one has to take over. And when that happens, it's important that both of them have a relationship with the advisor. I always try to work with both the husband and the wife, and sometimes I'll have more of a relationship with the other, but it does happen that, unfortunately, people get sick and they can't deal with it anymore, and or if they die and they can't deal, obviously they can't deal with it if they die, then the surviving spouse has to be able to make intelligent decisions and have someone who he or she can trust. So I would strongly encourage you to develop a system together and develop a relationship with an advisor who you can talk to. And by the way, if someone does get very sick, you have to consider whether you want to take the money out of joint name and move it to the individual name of the healthier spouse, because when someone dies, money does get tied up for a while, and you don't necessarily want that to happen, or at least move some of the money out of joint name. These are the types of discussions that I do have with people. If you are in this situation and you're not sure what to do, please feel free to get in touch. Just go to GoldsteinOnGelt.com and click on the Contact Us button, or you can always call the office in Jerusalem, 02-624-2788. That's 02-624-2788. Thanks so much for joining me on the Goldstein on Gelt show. My name is Doug Goldstein. Stay tuned for part two.
You're listening to International Investment Advisor Doug Goldstein on the Goldstein on Gelt show. Stay tuned for part two of the show. This show is designed to give general information related to investing and finance. Neither Doug Goldstein, his guests, nor the radio station are rendering legal, tax, insurance, pension, or specific investment advice. If you need such advice, contact a licensed advisor. Before making any investment decisions, please review the complete disclaimer at www.goldsteinongelt.com.